ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, Text 51. Bhagavan yata badram vaha tadyancham rishi saktamam vidya vrata tapah saram gatram yachita Machiram. Excuse me for a moment. Just set up. Bhagavan yata badrambo. Tadyancham rishi sattamam. Vidyavrata tapasaram. Gatram yachata machiram. Bhagavan yata badrambo. Tadyancham rishi sattamam. Vidyavrata tapasaram. Gatram yachata machiram. Bhagavan yata badrambu tadyancham rishi sattamam vidyavrata tapasaram katram yachata mam chiram. Ladies, please.
Bhagavan yata
Bhagavan, O Indra, Yata, go. Bhadram, good fortune. Bah, to all of you. Tadyansham, to Tadyansha. Rishi Sattamam, the most exalted saintly person. Vidya, of education. Vrata, vow. Tapaha, and austerities. Saram, the essence. Gatram, his body. Yachita, ask for. Machiram, without delay. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. O Bhagavan Indra, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dadyancha or Dadichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, in vows and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. Please repeat, O Bhagavan, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dadyansha or Didichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, in vows, and in austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. Purport. Everyone in this material world, from Brahma down to the ant, is eager to keep his body comfortable. A pure devotee may also be comfortable, but he is not eager for such a benediction. Sorry. Since Bhagavan, the King of Heaven, still aspired for a comfortable bodily situation, Lord Vishnu advised him to ask Dadyansha for his body, which was very strong due to his knowledge, vows, and austerity. Bhagavan yatta badram bhu dadyansham rishitattamam vidyavrata tapasaram gatram yachata machiram. O Bhagavan, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dadyansha Didichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. So the first thought that came to me in regard to this particular verse is the previous verse in which it is stated, a pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. So we may ask ourselves, why is the Lord giving the demigods all this horrible, this food, which is only going to make them worse than the way they are? They are asking for a material benefit. They want to defeat the demons, recover property which they think is theirs, which really isn't. It belongs to Krishna. But they have become identified with their bodies to some extent. And in such an identification, they also identify with those extensions of the body, which is their land, their family, their possessions. All of these become an illusory part of them, which they feel gives them some sense of importance, some sense of superiority, some sense of value, if you want to call it that. So why would the Supreme Lord, after he just says that it's like giving a sick person food, which is only going to make him sicker? It's a good question. So the only answer that I could, of course, come up with is that the demigods are not all bad. They're not. They're mixed devotees. Mixed meaning they have devotional desires. They do like to please Krishna. They do like to glorify Krishna. They do honor Krishna. They bow down to Krishna. But they also like to enjoy sense pleasure. They like to enjoy beautiful things, beautiful women, beautiful men, beautiful fragrances, very tasty foods, very glittering raiment or clothing. They're into their senses as well as being into spiritual life. They are a mixed bag, as we say. And the mixture is unfortunate because it's not what Krishna is, if we go back a few pages, telling them that would be in the best interest of them. He says in these prayers, he says in these instructions, in this advice, that this will lead to nothing but more of the same. You will defeat the demons, and then later on, the demons will fight you again and they will defeat you. And you will never really have a moment of peace of mind because you'll always be worried. Are they coming to attack me? Are they getting their forces together? Is their guru, Sukracharya, giving them more blessings? Do they have more power? So this is the worry of a person who has material desires. He gains something, but he's also very fearful of losing it. And if you fear losing it, then you don't have really a moment of peace of mind. And without peace of mind, one cannot even enjoy as fully as possible all the pleasures that he is living for. A person whose mind is not agitated or disturbed or shaken can truly enjoy the smell, for example, of a very fragrant flower. Or better yet, he can truly enjoy the taste of something very tasty, like some of the wonderful halva that's cooked here. He can taste it because his mind is pacific, it's calm. If your mind is turbulent and you're thinking this, that, and the other thing while you're eating, for example, you take a few chews, you gulp it down, you take another few chews, gulp it down, you hardly even know what it tastes like. Such persons generally require very spicy foods because they're hardly conscious of what they're eating. But if you pierce the tongue with some intense spice, then suddenly you become aware of the taste. Whereas a person in the sattvic or pure devotional mood, his mind is peaceful. He tastes, he chews, and he relishes this as Krishna's mercy, since it is food which is offered to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada used to eat, generally speaking, he used to eat quietly, without talking. Why? His tongue was not clattering in all kinds of... He could have been. He went on morning walks and he talked. He had room conversations and he talked. But when he ate, he generally was in silence. Because he was relishing Krishna. His calm, controlled, concentrated mind was fully partaking of all the deliciousness that Krishna was offering him to in this merciful foodstuffs. And this is actually very good. This is, of course, a very advanced devotee who appreciates everything about Krishna, especially the prasadam. So we have the demigods. They are different than the asuras in this respect. As I already mentioned, they honor the Lord. They respect the Lord. When they have problems, they go to the Lord. Krishna says four kinds of persons or pious persons come to me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he was searching for knowledge of the absolute truth. Of these, the one who is in full knowledge and always engaged in pure devotional service is the best, for I am very dear to him, and he is dear to me. So the best is not what the demigods search for. They love worshiping the Lord, they love honoring the Lord, they love glorifying the Lord, but for a motivated purpose. They want to get something for it. They want to keep their status quo. They want to keep their good, beautiful clothes. They want to keep their beautiful gardens, the fountains from which nectar flows. They want to keep their beautiful women and girls very nicely dressed. They want to enjoy the sense pleasure with them. So they pray to the Lord. They glorify the Lord. They honor the Lord in order to achieve these things. They also know there is a higher goal, but their attachment to these worldly sense objects is so intense that they find it difficult to give it up. And Krishna is not giving them that kind of a blessing to enable them to give it up. He's reciprocating with them and satisfying their desire. He's satisfying their desire because they are devotees, and for no other reason but mixed devotees. The demons, on the other hand, generally do not pray to the Lord. They know the philosophy of the Vedas. We can hear, if we go to the into the Bhagavatam, and we hear Hiranyakasipu preaching to his family after his brother had just been died. Actually, it's the highest philosophy that you can get. But he can't practice it. He says, yes, the Lord is the greatest, the Lord is the highest, the Lord is the best, and so forth. But then after that, he says he's unfair. He favors the demigods, and he doesn't favor us. He killed my brother, and he shouldn't have done that. So he knows better, he thinks, than God. This is the very difference. Second of all, when they commit a mistake, when they commit an error, they don't accept responsibility. They like to put the blame on others. This is demoniac quality. I can do no wrong. Only the others can do wrong in serving my highness. So, therefore, they impute wrong to others in reference or in regard to themselves. It's very interesting. When Prahlad Maharaj was being questioned by his father at the very end of the pastime, and his father accused him he said, "You think you're better than me, don't you?" And he said, "I have no power of my own. My power comes from Lord Vishnu, just as your power comes from Lord Vishnu." He says, "Where is this Lord Vishnu?" "He's everywhere." "Oh, really? Is he in this pillar?" "Yes, he's in the pillar." "Oh, let's see him come out." So he smashed the pillar. And out came this roaring sound, Lord Vishnu. Rrr. And then a fight ensued. Well, Lord Vishnu could have killed him immediately, but he likes a good fight. That's one of the reasons he came here, among many others. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend to this world to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principle of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. So he comes for that purpose. But he comes for his own pleasure too. So when Hiranyakashipu appeared, Nrisingadev appeared and roared, what was the reaction of Hiranyakashipu? "I'll show you. I'll fight with you. I'll show you that I'm more powerful. I will destroy you." That was his basic reaction. But what was the reaction of Indra when Indra, after for 7 days raining down water and hail and trying to drown the residents of Vrindavan, and realizing after a while that he could never do this, as Krishna was protecting them, and he realized that such was so foolish, what did he do? He went, the next day or so, he met Krishna while he was with his cowherd boyfriend, so he called him aside, and he apologized to him. He said, "My dear Lord, I realize what a fool I have been. It was so wrong of me to do what I did. It was my pride that got the best of me. And I'm so sorry that I have done what I did. Will you please forgive me? There is no degree amount of punishment that I should not get. But I am begging you for your mercy to please understand I am just like a child next to you. So he could apologize. He could admit his mistake. He could realize that he was wrong. This is the good quality. This is what we call the sattva bhav. He's not afraid to admit fault, although for 7 days he was definitely not admitting any fault. He was definitely determined to try to kill the residents of Vrindavan along with Krishna. But he realized he was tiny, insignificant, small, useless, worthless next to Krishna, who is all-powerful, full of all opulences. Similarly, Lord Brahma had that problem. He said, well, maybe I should. Is this a little boy who just killed Agasura? Is he really my spiritual master? I mean, look how cute he is, how fragile, how tiny he is. I mean, you just want to hug him. You don't want to worship this little beautiful boy. How can I do? Is he really my spiritual master? So he got into a quandary. And he said, well, maybe he is, maybe he's not. Let me give him a test. I'll test him. So first thing he did is he took away the little calves that he and his boyfriends were tending. The calves disappeared. The little boys that were sitting around Krishna, who was in the center, and they were having lunch. The little boys became very anxious, very upset. They said, what happened to our calves? They disappeared. Well, Brahma took them, put them in a cave, and put them in a trance. So they were about to get up, and what happened was that Krishna said, don't worry about it. I'll find them. So he gets up and he starts to look for them. Meanwhile, Brahma thought, let me do one more test. Let me get rid of those cowherd boys and put them in the cave also. Let's see if Krishna finds them. If he finds them, then yes, he's my master. And if he doesn't, well, I don't think so. So what happened was that he did just that. And then Krishna was looking around. And Lord Brahma was looking at him and he said, look, he's looking and looking and looking. He can't find the boys. He can't find the calves. Well, I'll give him a second more in my time to keep hunting. Maybe he'll find them. So a second in Brahma's time is a whole year. So he went back to his planet, then came back. Well, right after Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys, Krishna thought, well, if I go back without the boys, their mothers, oh, they'll be so disturbed, so upset. They live for their children. So I can't do that. I have to enable all of those mothers and fathers who are my devotees to feel happy. In fact, I'll make them happier than they ever have been. So what happened was that he, out of his own causeless mercy and power, manifested himself as all of these different cowherd boys. Maybe there were 50, 100, doesn't say exactly. But he looked like each one. He spoke like each one. He had all of the gestures of each one. He had the voice of each one. So when the cowherd boys came, also the calves, he manifested all the same exact looking calves. So when they went home, they were all really Krishnas who looked like the cowherd boys. Interestingly, as they came, they would bugle and they would play on their flutes and they would come in. The mothers would normally, they would greet them, give them a hug. But this time they felt an infusion of love in their hearts, such a degree, such a powerful amount that they had never felt before. And that is because they always wanted to love Krishna. They wanted the same type of, when I say wanted to love Krishna, I mean love him in a very physical way, just the way Yashoda would. She would hug him, put him to bed, she would bathe him. And many of these other mothers wanted to do the same, but of course they had their own children. And it would be very unseemly for them to say to Mother Yashoda, could you let Krishna stay over? We'd like to bathe him, we'd like to hug him, we'd like to do the... It's just not the propriety. So anyway, what happened was that Krishna wanted to satisfy that desire of all of them. So what he did is he manifested himself, as I said, as all those cowherd boys, but it was Krishna. And Krishna is all love. He's all peace. He's all power. He's all strength. He's all kindness. He's all sweetness. So when they felt Krishna, which they thought was their own sons, they felt a more intense love for their children. They hugged them. They didn't want to let them go. And when they went out to the pasturing grounds, they didn't want them to go again because they wanted to stay with them because they loved Krishna. So this went on, you know, for a period of a year. Well, when Brahma came back and he saw, he wanted to see if Krishna actually, was this little Krishna really my master? He wanted to see, did he find them? Of course, if he found the cowherd boys, if he found the calves, well, of course he's his master. But when he came back and he saw the cowherd boys are there. He said, wait a minute, well, maybe he found them. So he went back to the cave and he saw the cowherd boys sleeping there. He said, wait a minute, I just saw them there, how could they be here? So he went back again to the pasturing ground. There they were playing. So Brahma was starting to have a nervous breakdown. He didn't know what was going on here. Calves and boys there, calves and boys here. Anyway, that was not the end of it. Krishna had another little whammy in store for him. The next thing that Krishna did is he turned all the cowherd boys into Lord Vishnu's. And then many of the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the demigods, including another Brahma, were all worshipping all these Vishnus. Now, Lord Brahma was really confused. What's going on here? There I am. Here I am. There's all the demigods I know who are supposed to be up in their realms. And there's earth and water and fire and air, ether, the Ganga, the Yamuna, the Krishna. What's going on here? It was really pulling him apart. He was, as they say, splitting at the seams. He was coming apart. So finally, Krishna, he stopped his yoga maya. And then what happened after that was that he told Brahma, he said, I see that you were disturbed, you were upset, and that I wanted to simply show you that, you know, who I really am. And Lord Brahma felt such shame. He felt so remorseful that he had tried to test. You don't test your master. You don't test your father. They're to be respected. They're to be honored. They're to be glorified. You don't say, well, I'm going to see how powerful he is. I'm going to see how strong he is. Unless you're on an equal level, you can do that. Friends can do that with one another. But inferiors should not do that. It's very bad etiquette. So Lord Brahma began to utter the most beautiful, the most glorious, the most uplifting, the most salutary prayers to Lord Krishna. And he apologized. This was my point that I made at the beginning. He said, I'm so sorry, my Lord. I never should have done what I did. It was wrong of me. If I had doubts, I should have just come to you and asked you, are you really my master? But no. I played with you as if I were on your equal. So please forgive me. I beg you. It was all my pride. I was thinking I'm so superior, I'm so powerful, I'm so great. After all, Lord Brahma is in the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, and everybody salutes him. Everybody glorifies him. Everybody honors him. So you begin to feel very, very important, very superior. As a result of that sense of superiority, you feel you can do tests on people who are superior to you. So we can learn from this. How we can learn is because we ourselves may be put into positions of superiority, positions of honor, positions of glorification, where people ask you for advice, people ask for instructions, people ask for help. They're looking up to you. If, of course, we pray to the Lord and beg for His mercy to enable us to serve that person or those persons better and beg that the Lord will answer them through us And also beg that after the answer has come and the person then bows down to us and glorifies us and honors us, we in ourselves, within ourselves know that that has to go to Krishna and the spiritual master. It doesn't belong to us. In essence, nothing belongs to us because we don't own anything. Everything belongs to Krishna. He created the earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. He created all these forms. He gave the DNA code, if you will, to Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma went ahead and just created all these different forms. He couldn't do anything by himself. In fact, when he was manifested on the top of the lotus of Lord Vishnu, he was wondering, what am I supposed to do now? Where do I go? What's my duty? What's my mission? And the Lord said, tapa, tapa, tapa. Austerities, get pure. And after you get pure, I'll give you your mission. And he did. And he told Brahma. And so Brahma became you might say, sub-creator. Actually, the Lord, Krishna, is the real creator, the real destroyer, and the real maintainer. Lord Shiva works under the direction of Lord Krishna. Lord Brahma works under the direction of Lord Krishna. They cannot do anything independently. But they can forget that they are dependent, as we all do. We all came into this world. We're all originally Krishna-conscious living entities. But we came down here to become enjoyers of this material world. I remember Queen Puranjani, she was lamenting the loss of her husband, and then a Brahmin came by, who was Krishna himself, but he was disguised. And he said, my dear queen, even though you cannot immediately recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend? Unfortunately, you gave up my company to accept a position as an enjoyer of this material world. So that's our story. End of story. We're here. Where do we go from here? Down or up? Every moment that we have is a precious gift. Somebody once told me something, if I can remember it. I can't remember it. It was very interestingly put. Oh, yes. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. And today, today is a gift. And that's why they call it the present. Okay? Present. So, it is a present and it is a gift. Every moment is so precious. As I speak now, there are people in serious disorders and diseases. There are people dying and there are people who just are dead. We tend to think that this will happen to me maybe sometime far, far in the distance. But we hardly think that it will happen to us tomorrow, at the end of today. And yet each and every one of those persons thought that it will not happen to them immediately. And they lived their lives as if they had millions of years to go. So we should learn from their lessons. King Yudhishthira was asked, you know, what is the most incredible thing amongst human beings? And the answer was that they think that although people are dying by the thousands every day, that they will not die. So this is their idea. And we should not be like that. So how can we avoid this? How can we make the best use of every moment, of every second? We can make the best use of every moment and every second by remembering what? The holy name of the Lord. When we're crossing the street, we should be chanting. When we're even speaking to someone, if we can keep the chant in the back of our mind, that will purify the conversation. If a person tries to get us into some mayic discussion or some foolhardy debate, which will just consume your energy and leave you feeling exhausted. If we have the holy name in the back of our mind, it gets in the back of our mind when we keep it in the front of our mind when we're alone or during the japa period. But the purpose, one of the purposes of the japa period, of course, is to purify our heart and our mind. But it's also to enable us, to help us to remember Krishna throughout the day. If I'm chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and I'm... Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And if we're chanting it with devotion, with desperation, with intensity, like a child crying out for its mother because it feels alone and helpless and it wants the care of its mother. If we're chanting in that manner, from the heart rather than merely the top of the head, when we chant from the heart, it means there's some desperation there. And Krishna hears that. He knows we want that. It's like a child. You know, a child is in the crib and he goes, and mother says, he's probably just gurgling. Then he goes a little louder. Louder. And then he starts to scream. Well, the mother doesn't say he's just gurgling. She goes right to the child, picks the child up, checks him out, looks this way, looks that way, opens his mouth, looks at his eyes while he's crying, takes a bottle or her breast and feeds him, tries to in some way pacify him. Well, Krishna is no different than ever. Where does the mothers get their compassion? Where do they get their affection? Where do they get their devotion? They get it from Krishna. And no mother can compare to the degree of devotion, compassion, and love that Krishna has, because He is the source of it all. So when we cry out the holy name in some desperation, because we know we could die at any second, it could happen any moment. There's somebody it's happening to this very moment. Please, Lord, I don't mind dying, but I want to die with Your name on my lips. I want to die with my mind thinking of Your beautiful form. I want to go back home, back to You, and continue my service to You. Would You please, please allow this to happen? Because unless I have You, I have nothing. This world is just a bubble world. Now you see it, now it's gone. Look at this body. I'm looking at all the bodies out here. 100 years, these bodies will not be here. If they were not here, now they're here, then they will not be here. This is the nature of materiality. It's born, it grows, it's maintained, it creates byproducts, it dwindles, and it disappears. So why should we become attached to these material bodies which we know have to come to an end? And which, if we become attached to the pleasures that we feed them, if we become attached, attachment means to feel that something is indispensable. You can't live without it. The only thing we should feel, the only thing we should feel that we cannot live without, and this is a true fact, is Krishna and His great devotees like Srila Prabhupada. We cannot live without them because they are the true breath of life. They give us life, they give us purpose, they give us direction, they give us the sine qua non of existence, which is love of Krishna. If we have love of Krishna, we have everything. You'll have food, you'll have clothing, you'll have shelter, you'll have everything. Krishna says, those who always worship Me with exclusive devotion, meditating on My transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. And to those who are constantly devoted to serving Me with love, I give them the understanding by which they may come to Me. So Krishna promises, if we just depend upon Him, in all activities, just depend upon Me and work always under My protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of Me. If you become conscious of Me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life. If you do not work in that consciousness and act through false ego, you will be lost. So Krishna is telling, depend upon Me. Take shelter of Me. Hold on to My lotus feet, He says, and you will be very rightly and properly situated. Your life will be sublime and your love will expand, and you will know Me now and forever. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any comments that any of us would like to make, or any corrections that you'd like to make on anything that I've said? Any offenses that I may have made or anything? No? Sure? You got a question? Oh, you're just waving to me. Yes? Question? Yes, Mataji. You'll have to talk loud. Somebody has the mic. They'll give you the mic, and the persons on the internet can hear your question also. Yeah. Thank you, Krishnapad. Nice to see you again.
Oh, thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. I have a question, but I would like to say that the class you just delivered today was very beautiful, especially the point on the holy name, because we tend to become a little bit relaxed as far as the holy name is concerned, and yet the holy name is our passage from here to there. Yeah. Through the spiritual master.
So what is your question, please?
So much earlier on, you were mentioning about comfortableness, about the demigods, how they were trying to become very comfortable. And Srila Prabhupada was actually saying he gave a very simple and straightforward answer to that in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he says that one can never be comfortable in this world because we are not meant for sense enjoyment, but rather we're meant for self-realization. So yeah. That, to me, when I read that, it was very potent, very important, you know, put that in the right context. But then you went on to say that that the reason why Krishna answered the prayers of the demigods was simply because they were devotees. So this, to me, seems to bring about a little bit of a contradiction in terms.
Okay, so let me just answer that, because there may be others who have questions who may like to add on to that, okay, because we're getting over time. So as far as the contradiction goes, they are devotees, and the hope of Krishna is that they ultimately these demigods will become more and more purified by the association of Krishna, and by taking more shelter of Krishna, they become purified by that. And the ultimate purification for them is that they go back home, back to Godhead. For example, Lord Brahma, it is said that generally, although not always, generally Lord Brahma, when he finishes his business, his 100 years, I think 33 or 34 trillion something years, he finally goes back to the spiritual world. And many of the demigods hope that they will, but they may not. They may also remain attached to their positions and their pleasures. Now, regarding the position, Prabhupada makes it very clear, as far as comfort goes, he says that you can be comfortable, you can sit on a comfortable chair, but don't be attached to it. If you get a hard bench the next time you come there, don't complain to your host. Hey, last time you gave me a nice comfortable chair, why are you putting me on this hard bench? You know, don't do that. If it's hard, fine. If it's soft, fine. Indifferent to what happens in the material world. What really counts is that we remember Krishna, whether it's hard, whether it's soft, whether we're up, or whether we're down. The forgetfulness of Krishna is our real problem. Not whether the weather is nice, it's rainy, it's sunny. Who cares? You just do the best you can. You serve the best way you can. And you pray for Krishna to guide you, to direct you, to not forget him. Are there any other quick questions? Because we've gone really over. Yeah, that's what this time is for. Go ahead. Oh, there you are. Hari Bol, Vishal. I thought there was a voice coming from the wilderness. Go ahead. Yes. Right.
I'm sure there's many other pure
Well, I think you just did clarify it. Really, seriously, yes, there are some who are devotees on much higher levels, as you yourself just mentioned. Lord Brahma is known as a pure devotee of the Lord. Yet, by Krishna's arrangement, by his own yoga maya, he sometimes puts them into some distress or difficulty for our learning, our education. Lord Shiva was tempted by Mohini Murti. Lord Shiva can, it's mentioned in the purport that Lord Shiva cannot be tempted by any woman in this material world. And yet, of course, who is that person? That person is Mohini Murti, the Lord himself. So his attraction was really to God in the form of a woman. But the main point is that the purpose of the pastime is to show us that if a great personality like Lord Shiva can be attracted to the beautiful form of a lady, then what to speak of ourselves? So what the Lord is saying is that since these great personalities appear, emphasis, appear to have a fall, since they, what to speak of yourself? So, or ourselves. So what should we do? Krishna tells us, engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances, worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So Krishna will give us his unceasing, undivided attention and protection. He protects, he maintains, he directs, and he corrects. So he does all that, if we depend on him. If we want to depend on our own devices, well, he'll let us do that too, but we will get the bitter fruit of it. So the main point is that, yes, there are a number of great demigods who are pure devotees, but for the vast majority of them, such as Vayu and Varuna and Indra and those who work with Indra, they are not pure devotees. So they need to come up to a little higher standard, higher level. Okay? I think that does it, and I'm sorry I held you so late. My apologies to you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and to your wonderful devotional service. Hare Krishna.